Okay, this is May 30th, 1990, and I'm interviewing Mrs. Olga Ghosh. Now, Olga, could you tell us just briefly about, you were an editor, as I recall, here in Canada.
Yeah, where, for a while.
Uh-huh. Where did you, where was your newspaper and where were you living?
Well, it wasn't a very important paper. It was a community paper in Ottawa, mm-hmm. but it achieved a little prominence because... Mm-hmm. We did rather well, and it was the capital. Mm-hmm. And I really only started out writing a small column. I hadn't meant to do that, but mm-hmm. I was asked to do it. And the community grew, and the paper grew, and everyone left, and I ended up as editor.
Great. And then you came out to BC with your husband?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And now you're heading back to Ontario?
Yes.
Now, our paths crossed with the Quaker Newsletter, but with Germany, our paths crossed with you doing a translation of a German history text that I had. And when we were doing that, why, you started to talk about your own background, and you had lived in Germany, and I really found this interesting. And that's why we're going to probe that a little bit today. Where you lived in Germany during what date was that?
Well, I was born there and lived there until I was 17. But my father came from Estonia, so did my mother. Mm-hmm. And they were white Russians who, instead of going to Paris, came to Germany because... my father couldn't find work anywhere except in Germany. He was a medical doctor and married, and the small hospital in Westphalia, small Protestant hospital, offered him an internship. Mm. And so he came there and settled there, and I was born there.
And that's roughly, we were trying to find it on the map at Paderborn.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's near what major city? So we have an atlas here, a 1935 atlas.
Hanover.
Hanover, okay. So your father was a doctor and,
yes.
And your mother, was she?
No, my mother was university educated, which mm-hmm. In those days was not too common.
Mm-hmm.
I think she studied, I don't know, literature.
Now this this story becomes a little bit more complicated because you are of Jewish origin,
yes.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And at this time we know that this must have been dreadful for the Jews. Did you feel this persecution or hatred when you were living there, you're going to school?
Yes.
In what ways?
Quite severely.
Well, like say with your classmates or your...
Mm-hmm.
Did they know you were Jewish, and did they show this?
At first they didn't know, and I didn't know, because my parents were baptized, although my father was fully Jewish, born as a Jew, my mother only half. And for the first few years of my life there wasn't any discrimination. But... when my father moved to, after my mother died, my father moved to another city, and that happened to be in 1933. And slowly I began to hear remarks, and at one point we had a housekeeper who told me that, oh well, you have a Jewish name, and I said, I don't.
Mm.
And I went to my father and he said, yes you do.
Oh gee.
So
the housekeeper was, I guess, your first indication.
That I think that was the first time. And then in 1933, of course, Hitler came to power and remarks became more and more frequent, and it was quite... the realization slowly dawned on me. I had two younger sisters, and... I remember the day Hitler came to power on January the 30th. We were all called into the auditorium of the school, and were made to listen to the speeches. I don't remember the details of that, but it was a very emotional moment for the whole school. The principal had tears in his eyes, and we were told how Hindenburg and Hitler had shaken hands, and how Hitler had been elected chancellor, and Germany would be free from now on, and the school was dismissed. We had it the rest of the day off, and I came home full of this and told my father, and he said, "It's absolutely dreadful. Don't tell me about it. I don't want to hear about it. It's just awful."
He knew what was going to be happening.
Yes, you know. He had been he'd voted for Brüning at the time, and he was really stricken by this and found it very difficult, and we saw him getting more and more depressed. And then he had started a new practice after his marriage to my stepmother, and by Hitler came to power on the 30th of January 1933, and by April 1933 doctors and lawyers and I think other professional men couldn't have German clients, the so-called German clients, the insurances would not allow payment to a Jewish doctor. So that meant a doctor could only have private patients. It was freely mentioned and noised abroad that no decent German woman would go to a Jewish physician to be examined. And persecution became fairly visible, because one day when I came home from school, I couldn't get into the house without, you know, being really astonished, because outside there were SS, and when I went into the house, my stepmother told me that, you know, the SS stood outside every Jewish home for a whole day.
Good grief.
And they were watching who went in and who went out, but mainly they stood there to let other people know that this was a Jewish
Good
home
grief.
And one should not go in there. It was not nice.
Good. Did your father have his practice at the home?
Yes.
And with this 33, I know they prevented teachers from, Jewish people from going into teaching and
yes.
radio and journalism.
Yes.
With the medicine in your father's practice, then, what happened? Did he just treat Jewish people then?
Yes, eventually there weren't any patients anymore. He there was no income. And I think there must have been other manifestations of persecution. I was protected from that. Anyway, my father killed himself.
Good grief.
And, you know, he was not the only one.
Good
there were a large grief. Number of suicides.
It's okay. Stop there. That was... going back to this, to your school, did how did the teachers treat you as knowing that you were Jewish?
Well, it took quite a while, and we had been fairly prominent in the small city, and my father died, and it had caused a bit of a stir. There was another problem, and that was that he was cremated, and that meant he couldn't be buried in a Jewish cemetery. The Jews wouldn't accept that, and no ordinary cemetery, no German cemetery would take a Jewish person. So what to do with the ashes of my father? And my mother had them in a brown urn in our living room, in a special room, and I died. I mean, I suffered the tortures of the damned going into the house with the ashes standing around. It was a terrible thing. I was not quite 11 at the time. and these ashes were always there, and I hated to be alone in the house. It really scared me. It was silly, but nobody explained to me that really it wasn't terrible. There's quite a story that these ashes actually later, much, much later during the war, my stepmother buried them very carefully. She went by night into the cemetery and buried them with her own family because she was afraid the ashes would be bombed. I mean, she was bombed. Out. And every time she was bombed, the first thing she did was to save the ashes. It was absolutely gruesome.
Your house was bombed?
Well, by the time it was bombed, I had left Germany. This is a story my stepmother told me later.
Thinking back at this time, how about patriotism and nationalism? Did you experience a lot of this in the schools?
Oh, yes, it was phenomenal. Really.
Can you tell us about that?
All right. My stepmother didn't feel she could stay in the city where she was. So we moved to another town called Würzburg. It's a beautiful, it was a beautiful Baroque city in the south of Germany. And there was a lot of intense nationalistic feeling there. And eventually, we were told that all girls, I went to a girls' school, all girls should really join the German youth organizations. And I could never join it. And I'd say to my stepmother, why can't I join? And she'd say, well, because you can't. That's all. I mean, you're not allowed to. Then we were told that children who belonged to the youth organization didn't have to go to school on a Saturday, but children who did not join would have to go to school on a Saturday. And so I always had to go to school on a Saturday, and every Saturday there were fewer and fewer children, till in the end there were three of us, and we looked at each other and we knew we were Jewish. Then one day my stepmother received a letter, I don't know what the educational authorities were called there, but she was told that we, being Jewish, could no longer go to ordinary German schools and would have to enter the Jewish school.
This was when, what date, do you remember?
I think it must have been 1935, maybe. Maybe 36, I'm not sure. Anyway, yeah, I think it was 35. My stepmother didn't want to do that because she felt that that was the quickest way we could be traced. And also we hadn't really known a great deal of the Jewish tradition, and she didn't feel it was safe for us. So she got in touch with our relatives in Estonia, please, to take the youngest child, and they did. My young sister was 8 years younger, they took her, and they also took my next sister. And for myself, I was told, my stepmother sent me to a Protestant school, Protestant boarding school, and they kept me for about a year, and then they threw out all Jewish students. This was a school run by deaconesses and missionaries, and they couldn't no longer afford to keep any of us at school. So she didn't know what to do with me. I mean, there was nowhere to go. Another thing was that all Jewish money was confiscated, and we were able to live because my stepmother had her account, but she had to change her name because it was a Jewish name, so she took on her maiden name.
Which was what?
Her maiden name was Wegener, and she assumed that, and in that way she could maintain a bank account because all our money, the money for us children, was confiscated, simply confiscated.
And the name that was changed from was what? What was it?
Heidelberg.
Heidelberg.
So anyway, we just had nothing to live you know, we had nothing to live on anymore except my stepmother's money, and she kept us, and she tried to get charity from various religious organizations, but one by one they refused. They wouldn't deal with Christians of Jewish origin anymore. I've always wondered about St. Paul. It's neither Greek nor Jew, you know. It just didn't work like that.
Did your sisters in Estonia, did they survive the war?
Yes. One sister came to England before the war, a year before I did. Mm-hmm. And the other sister was young, and my aunt in Estonia kept her with her, and eventually she had to live in hiding. When the Germans came to Estonia, my aunt died in a concentration camp, and my young sister lived in hiding. And the Russians liberated her and educated her. They were very good to children. And eventually she married a Russian and lived in Moscow.
In school, I understand they banned certain authors or the works of them, Jack London and Upton Sinclair and H.G.
Yeah.
Wells. Do you recall this type of censorship?
No. I know there were... I knew books were censored.
Mendelssohn, they didn't play his music, or Hindemith, they didn't play his
music. No, I simply wasn't old enough to go into literature. But I did know that books were banned.
I want to come back to your father. I hate trespassing on this, because I guess it's a horrible thought, but what drove him, do you think, to suicide? What was it? Was it pressure from the Nazis? Or?
Yes, he did what many people did. There were a large number of people who thought that. They thought that since they were totally Jewish, I mean, there were already rumors of concentration camps and awful things going on. This was in the early days when people were still being released from concentration camps. They were simply camps, but they were not necessarily extermination camps at that time. And people had returned, and rumor was rife, and quite a number of Jewish men thought that if they were not around, if they weren't alive, their families would be safe.
Good grief.
And they didn't know that it didn't work like that. It was so inconceivable. The whole atmosphere was such a pressure cooker atmosphere. One almost began to believe that they were right, and that maybe we were totally unworthy. We were given, in school, we were given books. We had, instead of history, we had National Socialism studied. And the books were really absolutely horrendous. Slanted history, always repeating how Germany had suffered under Versailles and the reparations and the awful things that were done to Germany, but mainly through the instrument of international Jewry, and Jews were always depicted. We were told that Jews had certainly peculiar noses and peculiar ears, and that they also smelled.
So here you're sitting in the class and...
Yeah.
This is going on right in front of you. And,
and I'm careful not to let anyone know that I'm one of them.
Good.
But I know that I'm different, that, you know, I must have peculiar ears, and for sure I must smell.
Good.
And...
Did the teachers know you were Jewish?
Not at first, but eventually, because, you see, we went... After all,
this
we went
was
to church.
Saturday, yeah.
Yeah. So we, it took a while for the very subtle distinctions to filter through. At first, it was only full Jews, then it was people who were half Jewish. Then another thing began, and that was looking into your origins. People were asked to prove that they were Aryan. And that meant, then the famous jokes about the Jewish grandmother arose. You know, there were people who were totally German, totally Aryan. They were not tainted by anything. And then suddenly they discovered a Jewish grandmother and she fouled everything up. Mm. But, you know, with us, it went right back to the same generation. Your religion didn't matter at all whatsoever.
Mm.
Your racial origin.
You know, in school or after school, what did you? How did you spend your time? Say in entertainment or radio?
Yes.
Did you listen to the radio at all? Or?
Yes, radio was fairly new in those days, and we did have one, and I listened to it quite a lot. Jews, we were told that they were no good at sports. Jews are no good as runners or as jumpers or at team games. Jews don't know how to play on a team. And I was an impressionable young girl, and being excluded from sports and teams doesn't really improve your sports. You know, it meant I never got any practice. And of course I wasn't any good thereafter. I mean, other children did a great deal of gymnastics. A nice German girl was slender, wholesome, played at sports, had perhaps blue eyes, straight limbs. There was no flaw in her. And I was running to a little bit of fat, not much, but a little bit. And I didn't do sports because I could never practice. I was a good swimmer, but swimming wasn't anything that they valued. So bit by bit, one was isolated.
Mm. Going back to the radio, what did you listen to on the radio? Do you remember any programs like serials or?
I seem to remember that we lived in Cologne for a while, and there were some music hall programs, and I enjoyed them and I listened to them. But there was one thing, and that was whenever there was a Hitler speech, the whole school had to go to the auditorium again and listen. And this was really, and the Hitler speeches were endless, absolutely endless. Went on and on, and you couldn't move, you know. I particularly couldn't move. I paid rapt attention. And then after each speech, they sang the Horst Wessel lied and the Deutschland über alles, and your arms had to be held high.
Oh,
and they grew so stiff, and you dare not put them on the shoulders of somebody in front of you. It was really quite awful.
Then
there were rallies.
Did you know that, appreciate that this man was behind all the persecution? And I'm just wondering, as you listened to his speech, did you not have animosity or hatred towards him for causing this? Or did you?
When you're that young, you have no objectivity.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I certainly didn't. I never heard anyone discuss anything other than what I heard at school. My mother at home had only her maid, and she didn't discuss it with her. Every now and then I'd bring home a piece of propaganda, and she'd say, "It's just awful. Don't listen to it." I remember once we went to a restaurant, and of course by then, on most restaurants there was a notice saying no Jews.
No Jews allowed.
And I said, "I can't go in there." And she said, "Yes, we can. Come on, let's go in." And every restaurant, every store had a picture of Hitler. My mother said, "Now we're going to sit right underneath that." So we did, and she said, "Look at that brutal face." I was so horrified. I said to her, you know, I didn't say anything. I just, when we left the store, I said, "Don't say that." I was scared.
You were frightened. The SS, in the meantime, they're still standing outside your house?
No, that was only on one day.
That was only on one day.
That was enough,
In 1936, they had the Olympics at Garmisch. Do you recall anything about this?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
What do you recall?
Well, I don't remember any great particulars, but I do remember the general atmosphere of pleasure, really.
This was to show the Germans' superior race, but did that come across to
you?
Yes,
it did. Mm-hmm. And the newsreels, every now and then we went to a newsreel. They showed it, and Leni Riefenstahl, her making of the film, and Hitler was shown shaking her hand, and then when he refused to shake Jesse Owens'
That's right, he was black.
Yeah, that made headlines.
How did you feel? How did the German people accept that? Did they?
Well, they
thought that was all right.
From what I saw, they all agreed with Hitler. I mean, I really saw no dissension at all. I heard nobody disagree. I heard nobody say this is wrong. Never. Never at all.
That's what I was going to ask you towards the end of this. Why didn't people? Why were they swept along by Hitler? Why didn't they say, look, hey, this is not right?
I don't know. It's really hard to understand, but I've seen teachers with talking about Hitler with tears in their eyes.
Mm. They were really devoted.
Devoted. Yeah. Absolutely devoted. And young people loving it. People who had never traveled suddenly got easy travel. I mean, the propaganda was that you should get to know your own country, mm-hmm. and it was made easy for you to travel. And people traveled to the mountains, they traveled to the sea, and everywhere they went, there was a feeling of euphoria.
Mm. I'm going to mention some names here, and I'm just wondering if you have just maybe a one-line mm-hmm. comment about them. Hindenburg.
Yeah.
What comes to mind there?
On the 30th of January, he shook Hitler by the hand. I remember that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Rome?
Yes, Hitler went into Rome.
He was shot.
And shot him himself.
That's right.
I forgot who the partner was, but apparently, rumor had it, they were homosexuals.
Goebbels, any thoughts there?
Endless speeches.
Yeah, did you ever hear him speak?
Yes.
Was he more interesting to listen to than Hitler or not?
Not to me.
No.
I mean, you know, to hear these men speak on history and economics and so on, I mean, you know, I was a school child with
That's right.
No objectivity, no training, no knowledge. Rather burden.
How about Himmler? He was head of the SS.
No, we only heard the name every now and then. We really didn't know what he did.
And Goering?
Yes, a great deal of Goering.
What did you think of him? Was he a hero to the German people at this time, I guess?
Yes. He was actually extremely popular. He was enormously fat. And people laughed about him good-naturedly and enjoyed him, and there were jokes about him. I had a feeling he was very popular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I always remember him in this white uniform.
Yeah, yeah.
General Schleicher, do you remember him at all?
Yes.
Any comments about him?
No, I simply remember the name. He was one of the stars in the firmament.
You mentioned about having rallies, and I was have down here in Nuremberg in 38, they had these massive Nazi demonstrations.
Yeah.
Do you recall in your own city or in your own town being involved in stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe any of these events?
The whole school had to march. I mean, we did an awful lot of marching. And we had to march to an enormous square, city square, and stand in formation. And I might have been Schleicher. Well, the local Gauleiter, whatever, local big wheel, came and made a speech.
Mm-hmm.
And the speeches were always broadcast from the trees, and, you know, the whole city was filled with them. You couldn't get away from them.
In 1938, this was also a year where there was a massive revenge against the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, this there was a young Jewish boy about 17 years old, and his father had been shipped off to Poland and to a concentration camp. So he had shot the secretary in the German embassy, and then supposedly there was a sweep of emotional riots across Germany. It's supposed to be spontaneous, but history tends to say that it really wasn't.
Well, that's quite interesting, because my stepmother lived in Cologne at the time, and this was supposed to have originated in Cologne. Cologne was actually the most severe city on that particular day. I was already in an institution where I had to stay. I couldn't get away. My stepmother had been trying to get me out of Germany, and it took 3 years, and I had to just live in hiding for 3 years. But she came to see me. This was the Kristallnacht. She came to see me to tell me what had happened. That was when absolutely everything we had was confiscated. My stepmother lived in an apartment building, and she said that the night before the Kristallnacht, there was a knock on her door.
Kristallnacht, now this is the night
of the crystal night.
Kristallnacht. Or the broken glass. Okay, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And she said a man stood outside and said, "Have you any weapons?" And she said, "Well, yes, I have the riding crop of my husband's." And the man said, "Well, you have to surrender that."